Hello and welcome to Preparing Foster Youth for Adulting, the podcast designed to highlight strategies and resources that help youth in care transition to adulthood successfully. Our guest today is Bruce Wingate. Bruce is the president of Foster Care Furniture, an organization that works with youth aging out of foster care in Boise, Idaho. Welcome, Bruce. Thank you so much for joining our podcast series. How are you today?
Excellent. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. I'm so glad to hear you're doing well. I know we talked earlier, you're getting over a little bit of an illness, so I'm glad you were feeling better today and could talk.
Well, we'll see how long I can talk. Let's do it that way.
I tell you what, let's see. The first thing that we wanted to ask is to find out about you and your background. So could you please tell us a little bit about yourself, and what was the journey that brought you to working with young people aging out of foster care?
Okay, yeah, the journey was quite lengthy. My professional career was in television advertising and sold advertising to various people that wanted to let their brands be known. I started about 15 years ago. A child was missing here in Boise, Idaho, and it was July, and it's about 105 degrees, and some 200 Boiseites were out looking for him. And every night, the parents would get on the TV and say, "Help me find my boy, you know, I'm just missing him." Well, it turned out that the mother's boyfriend, actually did the child in, and they threw him in a canal. But the thought was there, like most of these incidents, they get lots of publicity for about 2 or 3 weeks, and everybody's up in arms and saying, "We got to do something about this. We got to do something about this." And then after a couple of weeks, life happens and other things take place, and they go on with their lives. So at that point, I said, "Well, hey, let's do something to keep protection of children and child abuse prevention in the limelight." So I started Protect Idaho Kids then. And for years, I did various events and things to increase the awareness on child abuse. And then throughout that time, we did several things. We did picnics in the park for kids during the summer so they could have some lunches, because when school's out, they just don't have as many resources. So I did that. We had started the Tuesday night dinners for the homeless children, and that took about 2.5 years, and then I transitioned that over to other people. But right now, they serve 7,000 meals a year with that. So anyway, throughout the 15 years, our main goal for the Protect Idaho Kids was to try and get the religious exemption laws here in Idaho changed so that parents couldn't just let their kids die from faith-based child neglect. We believed that everybody should be able to believe what they want and have religious freedom, but that religious freedom shouldn't be allowed to harm other people. And in this case, it was harming the kids. So I did that for years. And then the politics these days, with all the polarization, they just wouldn't let go of the religious freedom. And so I said, you know, this isn't going to happen in my lifetime. I'm 83 and they're not going to change. So I wanted to do something else. So this is a long story short, but that's how I got into foster care. I wanted to do something that would actually happen. And I don't think that the exemption situation would happen. So I looked at how I could help kids, and the aging out of foster care, as you know, it's a tough situation for those kids. They are suddenly, the funding ends and they may not have any money. They may not have any home. They may not have any car or food. So it's just a tough time for them. And I went to foster kids for a couple reasons. One is, when I was a kid, my best friend, I call him my brother from a different mother, but my best friend was in a kinship situation, because his mother was taken away and taken down to Carville, Louisiana. I don't know if you know about Carville, but that was where they have the Hansen disease or leprosy people confined. They couldn't come home. They couldn't vote. They couldn't see their siblings or their children. And if they did have children at Carville, the kids were taken away from them and they couldn't keep them there. So anyway, his mother went down there and he was raised in a kinship relationship with his grandmother. And he was my best friend. So there was kind of a foster kinship relationship there. And then I was a guardian ad litem here in Boise for a year and got to know the foster care system and worked with foster care. And so when I looked for something to do after I determined that I'm not going to get the religious exemption laws changed, I went to foster care and said, well, let's help these kids out that are aging out of foster care. So long story to your journey question, but there it is.
Wow, a long and winding road, as they say.
Very windy.
Well, let me ask this. Well, for those who are listening, they might be familiar with CASA, but they might not be as familiar with GAL. But they're often partnered together, are they not? Or are they always partnered together?
I'm sorry, who are you talking about now?
CASA.
Court appointed.
Special advocates.
Yeah. That's what a guardian ad litem is court appointed. I work for the 4th Judicial District here in Boise.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And for those who are listening, you don't have to be a lawyer. It sounds like maybe a, you know, guardian ad litem. You might have to have some sort of lawyer background, but you don't.
No, it's actually, and I'd encourage people to look into that because it's really helpful. The child involved usually has this different lawyers assigned to his case. If the case goes on for quite a while, and usually they're on for at least a year, then they sometimes have different judges and they have different people involved with their case, different doctors and so forth. The guardian ad litem is the one individual that's the same person all the way through the procedure. And usually, as they say, they try and unite the child back with the family if they can and give that a year. And so it's a lengthy process, but it's very important for the children to have somebody that looks after their interest.
Yeah, absolutely. And it provides them consistency that they don't otherwise have in their
situation in foster care. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, I'm glad to hear that you had that experience. And I myself aged out of foster care, and
wow.
I was in a mix of group homes, kinship care, and so I had foster parents, but they were relatives of my uncles, so technically not related, but extended family related.
Oh, okay.
So I went through a little bit of that myself, and I know, you know, how much that consistency.
How many foster homes were you in? Just the one?
Two group homes, my grandmother, and then foster parents.
Okay.
After that.
Yeah.
So four altogether.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So only for a couple of years, that's four different high schools in 2 years.
Oh, wow. That's
so
what happens.
So if I had been in longer.
That's what happens is that a lot of times the kids are put in four or five different homes and four or five different schools, and it's just not conducive to any regular type of existence.
Right, exactly. In my case, my sister and I, we didn't have the opportunity for any kind of adult consistency because we were changing states.
Oh, wow.
Right? So we went from North Carolina to Maryland to Pennsylvania.
Oh,
so our social workers changed every time. So it was, you know, it was challenging. So that I definitely appreciate from that perspective.
Wow.
The having some consistency for young people.
Well, you're doing good. Trying to make amends here as far as helping others. So that's good.
I am trying. Yeah, through Aging Out Institute, we're really trying to move the needle a little bit if we can on the outcomes for these youth. So speaking of outcomes for young people aging out of foster care, I know that you're doing something with foster care furniture that is making a difference, I'm sure. So I want to find out from you, you know, how did that get started and what is it that you do for young people?
Well, as I say, it got started because I told you why I chose foster care, but I got started because I just did not want to, at 83 in my years, with trying to just beat my head against the wall with the legislature. So I wanted to see if I could help some kids in another way. And I picked foster care furniture because what we can do with that and what we are doing is I've partnered with the college here, College of Western Idaho, and Woodcraft, which is a company that has woodworking tools and all the expertise for making things. And what we're going to do is we take the children or the aging out youth and we train them on woodworking in a classroom for 2 hours on woodworking skills and carpentry skills. And then for 2 hours a day, they help us make the furniture. And then we make the furniture and then we sell the furniture and the money proceeds all go to foster care and it helps the program. But if there's any excess, it'll go back into foster care, various programs that help the kids. So it's a 13-week program, actually 12 weeks. And then the 13th week is a job fair where we assist them with their resumes and invite construction companies and carpentry companies and cabinet makers to interview the kids. So it's a way to train kids. It's a way to help them try and get a career, get employed, and get some income. The Department of Labor has agreed with the kids that do qualify for their program to give them $15 an hour while they're going through their training. So instead of having to pay for, you know, $5,000 or $10,000 for a training program, they can come to us and make money while they get trained and hopefully get a career out of it.
How did you get that arranged with the Department of Labor, that payment during training?
Well, they have apprenticeship programs. You have to meet the requirements. The kid has to meet the requirements. You got to be 18 and not in another school and some other requirements that they're looking for. They have to have, in their mind, an interest in actually becoming either a carpenter or a woodworker of some sort. They don't want to just have kids come in just for the money. So there are certain requirements they have, but they do have a couple of programs that help, apprenticeship programs that help kids. And then the Workforce Development Council here in Idaho is a group that we are working with that what they do is help kids and help people get employed. It's a Workforce Development Council, so they help them be prepared, get training, whatever it takes to get them employed. So that's their charge.
Oh, okay. So I'll back up a little bit. I mean, it's wonderful. I'm so glad that you're teaching these skills and giving them a path to employment. But why woodworking? Why did you decide on that? There are so many different things that you could do to support young people aging out of foster care. There's employment, there's education, there's housing, there's life skills. I mean, there's all sorts of different avenues you could take. What was it that led you to choose woodworking and carpentry?
Well, they have a food program here. What is it? Life's Kitchen, that teaches the kids culinary arts. And I had done that from my Tuesday night dinner, so I wasn't interested in that. I looked around and said, okay, if I start with basic carpentry and we're making like Adirondack chairs and we're making tables and we're making end tables and coffee tables and shelves and so forth, we make the spec. If somebody needs something, for example, there's a hotel downtown here that's being built that has 122 rooms and a huge budget, $68 million or something like that. And so I went to them. They want to have a box to lock up the liquor because in Idaho, you can't have like you have in a lot of your refrigerators. When you go to a hotel, you have a bottle of wine in there and maybe a couple of the little whiskey things that they give you on the airplanes, the little small bottles. Well, they have to lock that up in Idaho. So they wanted to have a little box that they could lock this up in and have it sit on the desk. So the people check in and they get a key to the box and they can unlock the box and have a bottle of wine or a drink. Well, 122 rooms, they want one for each room at $350. That's, you know, $38,000 worth of business. So it's things like that that I chose a good avenue to make money because there's so much building going on here. And it's the first phase of what, if I live long enough, what I plan on doing. The second phase, which would probably start in 2026, is development company. And we would teach the kids, we'd still teach them the carpentry and the electrical and the plumbing and all the carpentry skills. But we'd also teach them development of property. And then as in a year later, we would introduce hopefully the tiny houses. So that's the ultimate goal, is to build tiny houses so that the kids can have a place to live when they get out. So they have the skills, they have the income, they know carpentry, they know real estate development, and they know how to build a tiny home. So they have some skills, and they also have some resources that they can get low-income housing if they work. So that's the ultimate plan. Stay tuned, and we'll see.
Wow. I hope that comes to fruition. That's amazing. I love that.
Well, I do too.
Let me ask about the contract work. So is all the woodworking that these young people are doing contracted? Or is it sometimes you're just building furniture that they want to build, and then do you sell it, like online?
Well, it depends. Right now, I've got so much building going on here in the hotel. There's about 15 hotels going up in the greater Boise area. And, you know, we will have probably 8 to 10 kids at a time. Okay. So it's not like a big factory where I can say, you want 122. Well, here next week, I'll give you 122. You know, we can maybe do 10 or 15 at a time. So it's going to take us several weeks to do that. But the other hotel here wants us to do some coffee tables for them. So I would prefer to get what the customer wants, because then I can do their dimensions. They may have a space that they want a certain dimension in, and I can do that, where versus if I build a bunch of stuff and have it in storage, and they say, well, I like that, but it's too big. Well, you know, it's hopefully going to be by spec, already ordered before we build it. We'll see. Mm-hmm. That's another stay tuned.
Well, they're learning about that too as well, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah.
You know, meeting the expectations of a contract like that.
Yeah, yeah. And how to market it. There's lots of things that we can train them on, and lots of things that they hopefully, if they have those skills, will be able to be employed and help them get to that magic adulthood that they have a difficult time transitioning to.
Yeah, yeah. And where are they doing the work? Where are they doing the woodworking or the carpentry? Is it the same space that they're learning, I assume?
Well, I would say the Lord's been with us on this one, because I started it out just like I started out the Tuesday night dinners. I had no commercial cooking experience at all. I'd never cooked for more than our family, maybe 10 people. Now, all of a sudden, I was cooking for 300 people a week. You learn by that. I learned that, you know, what you needed for a commercial kitchen, how to cook the dinners and so forth. I've done carpentry, but I've never really done woodworking. So I went to this woodcraft that has all the woodworking tools and everything. I said, well, I'm going to need to get some basic tools for making cabinets and tables and things. And they said, well, why don't you go down here to the maker shop? So I went down to the maker shop, and here they have a 7,000 square foot. Actually, it's on my website. You can actually see the maker shop. It's got 7,000 square feet. It's got everything you could possibly want. It's got jointers and planes and table saws and band saws and all the drills, everything you could possibly want. Plus, it's all vacuum so that every tool has a vacuum. You don't get a bunch of dust and dirt. So anyway, this is huge, and it's got everything we need, and it has a classroom. So I chose that, and then I was going to get my own space. And I said, well, no, because some of the best woodworkers in the state and possibly some of the best woodworkers in the United States are there doing their crafts, because they don't have to have a shop at home. And if you have a shop at home, you got to keep all your saws sharp and your tools in great shape. And this maker shop does all that. They always have all their tools are just first class. And so I was looking for a place to call my own. And all of a sudden, I didn't even know this maker shop existed. And there it is. So we're doing that. We have the classroom there. We teach the kids for 2 hours in the classroom. And then we take them out and they'll make furniture for us. And then we sell the furniture. We're a nonprofit. Nobody makes any salary off the program. It's all nonprofit, and all the proceeds go to the foster care.
But the money from the contracts helps pay for the services, correct?
Well, yeah, I would say that if we get all 122 box liquor boxes that I talked about would probably make about 40 grand, and probably 20 of that would be able to be pumped back into the program.
And when did you start this?
I've been doing it for about 15 months now.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's just, I'd say it's new, but starting to hit its groove, maybe?
Well, this week is huge. The next 2 weeks, we have the contract that I've made three prototypes. This is the third one, and now this third one is going to be supposedly solidify the final okay on the liquor boxes. So that's coming up this week. Well, next week. I show it to them this week, and they'll probably get the answer back next week. And then next week on the 28th, our Workforce Development Council is going to finalize our grant, and they say that that'll go through. So that'll give us enough money to get the classes going and hiring the instructors and instructors and all that. So
that's great.
New, but it's taken 15 months to just get the elements in place. As I say, it took me 2.5 years on the dinners to turn that over. So I was expecting it to be a long haul. I hoped it would be, I start in July and I've got kids employed by August. But, you know, it doesn't work that way. As you know, it takes time.
It does. And it also makes me think of the phrase, measure twice, cut once.
There you go. There you go.
How appropriate is that?
That's very, very, very.
I know you're talking about helping them get the jobs. What does your organization do as far as after they get the job, supporting them beyond that? Or is this really just kind of a jumpstart for them in their career? Because some organizations will provide ongoing mentoring or maybe you would serve as kind of a touch point for the employer should there be any issues. I'm just curious what your plan is for that.
Right now, there's casey.org and others that have contacted me. Next week on the 26th, well, that's next Monday, we have the second year in a row I'll be down at the state capitol showing what we do. It's a foster care day at the state capitol, so all the organizations that partake in helping foster kids will be there. And I network with them, reach out to them, and try and set up networks to both get the kids that they think would benefit from the program, and then also extend any services that they offer to the kids. And there's a lot of them. I mean, there's ones that will help them with finding homes, and if they're food insecure, helping them with, you know, the organizations, there's a lot of them out there. So I'll work with them any way I can. Our organization will mostly be, as I say, a training, and we work with a general contractors association to try and get them employed. Then I would turn it over to other Department of Welfare and other agencies that specialize in assisting the kids in those endeavors.
Yeah, it sounds like you'll have maybe some kinds of partnerships, if nothing else, referrals.
Yeah.
To provide that wraparound
type
of support.
And Family Advocates, the Guardian and Item group that's here, they're pretty big on reaching out and helping the kids too. So,
great.
I don't want to take on too much of other than the training, because that's going to be a big chore. If I can get to the tiny houses, that then in my lifetime, I'll be a very happy camper.
Well, I tell you what, there's another organization. I'd have to look it up because it's escaping my mind right now, but there's another organization in California. They were lining up partnerships to have young people build tiny homes on wheels. Basically, you know,
I saw that on the internet, and I think I have it somewhere too. Yeah, there's others. I'm not there yet. I've got to go through probably several years before I'll get there, but I'd say maybe 3 or 4 years. That would be my hope, you know, but there's a measure once to cut 50 times before I get there, you know. Or measure once and whatever. So
measure 50, cut once.
There you go. Okay. There's a lot of that before I get to tiny homes.
No, understood. Well, there's going to be a podcast coming out here shortly in the next couple of days. So it will be out before this podcast is released. And I had interviewed Petra Cares. That's an organization that provides a similar kind of trades training to young people aging out of foster care, only it's in the automotive area. They teach young people, you know, how to work on car engines and kind of the basics of, you know, what you need to know as a mechanic. And then they help them get jobs in that field with dealers and other employers in the area. But the thing that they do, and I'm curious if you're going to do anything like this, is when they have a graduate, somebody graduates from the program, they're going to give them a really nice tool set that an auto mechanic would need. So I'm just wondering if you've had any thoughts about what young people would get when they graduate. Would they get anything like that? Because that could be awesome.
Well, it's not as easy in carpentry because what you'd have would be, you know, I suppose we could give a hammer or something, but, you know, table saws or lathes or whatever, or you know, something else. So I'd have to think about that.
That's true.
Well, I'm sure we'll have something that we give them, but I don't know that a toolkit for, you know, you give a lot of wrenches and a lot of sockets and a lot of little things to work on a car. I'm not too sure a hammer and a nail is going to be a real thrill to a kid to get the stuff for woodworking. The good thing that they do, and I will probably do this, is the maker shop has, it's kind of like a athletic club, a tennis club or something that you pay dues to belong to. And so I would, when they're going through the 12-week period of training, I will pay for their dues so that the monthly dues so that they have the ability to be there. And we are only 20 hours a week. Now they can come in the other times of the week. We'd be from 10 to 3:30 and they 4 days a week. So they come in on Friday and Saturday and Sunday and during the evenings and make whatever they want. Now, the ideal gift, I would think, for the graduates, if they make it through the training program and we get them a job, I think the ideal gift would be a month's, which is $200, a month of fee so that they could come in and work on anything they want to work on, cabinets, a table, and it's amazing what products are made in this maker shop. Actually, you can go on the online and look at my website, and there's some examples there. But there's some of the tables that are conference tables that are just absolutely phenomenal. They have a resin through the middle of it. It looks, they call it River Run tables, and they're just absolutely gorgeous. So anyway, that might be a thought, and I'll give it some thought. Got other things that I'll be doing first to get them graduated, but if they're a graduate, yes, I'll go on record. We'll give them a prize.
What is your website? I know you mentioned your website a couple of times. Let's go ahead and give that out. What is your web address?
It's www.fostercarefurniture.org.
And if somebody wanted to reach out to you, is there a way through the website for them to send a note?
Yeah, my email's on there, but it's okay. I'll give that to you too. It's B for Bruce. B Wingate, W-I-N-G-A-T-E, at mac.com. B Wingate at mac.com. And yeah, I would be more than happy to get input from people that have suggestions or want to help. If they live in the Boise area, they can certainly volunteer to help make the furniture. If they have any contacts with people that might be building buildings, whether it's apartment buildings or houses or hotels or restaurants or whatever, they could let us know that the contact that I could get, maybe get a hold of them. Those contacts are going to be buying furniture anyway. And so, yes, they have their normal suppliers, but if they buy them from us, it really helps the kids instead of just the money going to another furniture manufacturer.
Sure. And can people just donate money to your organization?
I never take money.
No.
Yes,
that's a
absolutely.
Strange thing.
They can send gold, they can send necklaces, they can send money. Yes, it's all welcome. And there's a donate button on our website. It's right up at the top. You can't
all
miss
right.
it. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, I neglected to ask this early on. What ages are you going to be working with? Are they already aged out of foster care when they come
to? They have to be 18. and I think it cuts off at 26. That's for the Department of Labor, and also for insurance purposes at the maker shop, they have to be 18.
Okay.
So that's the group that we'll be working with. But the registration is actually going to go through the College of Western Idaho. So we will reach out and have the program available to foster care kids aging out. However, if there's not enough of them, we will also take other kids into the program. So it's up to the foster care kids, foster care organizations. If they have a kid that can benefit from this, you know, we need to know about it and get them online and get them signed up for the program. In Boise, there's not that many foster kids every year aging out, but collectively between 18 and 26, there's quite a few.
Yeah. Now, do they have an extended foster care program in Idaho where they can sign up to, you know, extend the services that they receive as long as they, you know, are getting an education or have a job? Some states have that.
I don't know what the requirements are, but yes, they do get additional assistance for education and other reasons. I just don't know the requirements.
Okay, okay. The thing I love about what you're doing is it really introduces the young people to a career path that's so varied in carpentry. I have a brother-in-law who's a Finnish carpenter, you know, and he did all like mantles and banisters mm-hmm. and really high-end stuff. And, you know, he started out doing roofing and he worked his way up and just became, you know, like a master carpenter, if that's the right term. But it just seems like young people could go in all sorts of directions starting where you're having them start. Is that accurate?
Well, you know, part of the program will be woodworking, but the other part will be construction, not just carpentry, but construction, which we have video and instructors that will teach them wiring, electrical, plumbing, roofing, framing, all the elements in carpentry all the way through. Now, they're not going to be, with a week of electrical, they're not going to be an electrician, or with a week of plumbing, they're not going to be a plumber, but they'll have a basic understanding of it. Well, actually, the Construction General Contractors Association, when we asked them what would they like to see in a training program, they said, well, they'd like to have the kids be able to read a blueprint, you know, things like that. They'd like the kids to show up. They'd like to have the kids be punctual. So those are the things that we'll emphasize too, not just the technical aspect of it, but actually being employed requires that you have some certain personal elements that you might need to work on. So that's kind of where we're going with that.
Okay. What is your opinion if you were counseling young people aging out of foster care, if they're interested in getting some kind of education beyond high school, comparing a college education with going into the trades, what would you counsel young people to do?
Wow. I think it depends on their circumstances. College, I think, requires a longer term commitment. College requires a lot more commitment on your part to be in a program that may or may not interest you, but you still have to go through it to get your degree. Whereas a trade, most kids that go into a trade are somewhat interested in that particular industry. Like you say, automotive, they may be interested in automobiles, carpentry, they may be interested in woodworking, that. So they have an interest in it. I'm not saying it's hard to be interested in a college education, but it's so diverse that there's a lot of things that you may not want to go through. So I think that depends on the youth and what their goals are, what their circumstances are. Are they able to really commit to a four-year program? What do they see themselves doing with the college education? Are they going to a college education just for a job, or they have a career in mind? For example, I'll just say accounting. If a kid wants to become an accountant, yes, or a lawyer or a doctor, and they have the will and they have the wherewithal to do that, then they'll have to go to a college. But if they're just doing it, say, well, I hear if you graduate from college, you can get a good job, that's probably not enough. They probably will start it for a while and drop out. I'd have to talk with a kid about what they want to do and where they're going and what their resources are.
Yeah. You know, I am a proponent of going into the trades. Now, I have a college degree, and I think that college degrees are great. And generally speaking, over your lifetime, having a college degree really does ensure, you know, a better return financially. However, since the trades, there is such a need. So many people are retiring from the trades, and they don't have enough young people going into the trades to fill those positions, that I think they're getting paid more, right, because of the demand. And it's like you're saying, is there's less commitment up front to get the skills that you need. And some companies will provide you that apprenticeship, right, train you
absolutely
on the job. And so you can be making money much quicker. And in my mind, I'm not saying it's a guarantee, but I'm going to guess, I have no research backing this up, but I'm going to guess you are much more likely to be assured a job if you go into the trades these days than if you get a college degree.
Well, yeah, I agree. I've got a college degree too. And most of the jobs that I applied for required a college degree, even back when I was a younger man and seeking employment. But I'm not so sure that the college degree made that much difference in terms of income compared to some of the people that had a skilled trade. Now, if you're learning a trade that doesn't have any skills, that's one thing. But I had a kid I graduated from high school with that was a plumber, and he went on to be very successful. And then he got bigger and bigger in the plumbing, commercial, and he made millions of dollars in plumbing. So it can be done, but it depends on your skill level, and it depends on your drive and motivation, that type of thing. So
yeah.
I'm with you. I think that the immediate future is trade. The long range, college might help you better off long range. I found the most beneficial thing in college was not necessarily the subject matter, because I didn't take a specific, I took general business, but I found that one of the most beneficial things was requiring me to prepare twice a quarter for the midterms and the finals. You have to get prepared for them. You have to come up with some answers, or you're taking all this time and energy for nothing. So I think that was the big thing, that 4 years of three times a year, you have a midterm, and three times, you know, you got finals. And that's a lot of decision-making you have to come up with. And as a young person, that decision-making training is just as important as anything else.
Yeah, that's true. The planning, mapping out your time, all of that. Now, I know we only have a few minutes left, so I do want to ask, do you have any thoughts on what the foster care system could do to improve the outcomes for young people who are leaving foster care at the age of 18 or 21, depending on your state?
Yeah, on my website, and I'm sure on yours and others, there's the write-ups on what the children face, and it's pretty grim, the statistics that are there for the kids aging out of foster care. I think that the thing that should be and could be done would be to raise the awareness level with people. I'm not so sure that most people understand that it's that difficult for kids when they age out. And I think if a general awareness campaign was done, I think it would really help the program. I don't know who would head that up, but I think that it could be something that would maybe change things a little bit if more and more people knew about the difficulties that the kids encounter.
Well, I could see, and I agree. I think awareness is really important, because I mean, there are a variety of different things that could come out of that. There could be people like yourself who became aware of the challenges through whatever means you became aware of it, and you wanted to do something. You wanted to start a nonprofit, right? So you've got people who do things, the activities that help young people directly. There could be people who want to advocate for these young people, right? To politicians, for policy.
Well, and they could become guardian ad litem. So that's a program that they'll train you how to do that, and you can help the kids right away.
Exactly. CASA, G-A-L. If you're wanting to look into that, you can just look, CASA being CASA/GAL. There's a national organization, And then every state has chapters.
Right.
So you just would need to find them to connect. Or mentoring, right? There are lots of mentor programs out there, probably more in the more urban areas. If you're rural, like really rural, it might be tough to find them. But I don't want to say they're not there. You just try to do searches.
Yes.
And see if you can find it. So yeah, I think awareness is really important. And even just being willing to, I don't know what avenue's out there for this, but to open up your home if you have a bedroom, right? I'm just thinking if there are programs near you where you can open up your home and be a host family to a young person aging out of foster care to give them at least that stability of housing.
Yeah.
While they're trying to launch into adulthood.
Right.
That could also be helpful. But you usually have to do that through some kind of organization.
Well, I agree. That would be an excellent program for kids. Well, as I say, go to a website, my website or somebody else's. And if you read the statistics, a lot of the young girls get pregnant at an early age. Many of the kids get incarcerated. More than average by far are homeless within 3 or 4 years after they age out. There's just some very difficult statistics that people, I think if more and more people knew about those statistics, I think that more and more would come to help in whatever way they could or whatever way they would. There'd just be more help out there because I just don't think most people know that it's that difficult.
I think awareness is growing slowly, but it's taking a long time.
Yes, it is.
To reach everybody.
Yeah. And there's just so many things that people are anxious about right now. To take on something new is difficult too.
That's true. All right. Well, I think we've unfortunately reached the end of our time for our conversation, Bruce, but thank you so much for spending a little time and explaining what it is you're doing there with Foster Care Furniture. And I'm excited to find out how things go as you launch this and grow to your next phase 2, as you said. So maybe I'll just follow up and see how things are going in a couple of years.
Well, please do. Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah. In fact, I'll text you or email you what happens in the next month or so, because there are gigantic steps that we're going through right now that will make a huge difference. So I really thank you for having me on the podcast, and hopefully it'll make more people aware of what needs to be done and they can come aboard and help.
Well, you're very welcome, and I'm sure that it will. All right. For those of you who have listened to the end of this podcast, thank you very much. We put out a podcast every couple of weeks or so on average. We try to put one out. You can go to our website, agingoutinstitute.org, and just look for the podcast link on the left-hand menu. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time.